Application Academy is closing if you are applying to medical school in 2024 to start in 2025. We are closing in mid-April, April 12th or 13th, somewhere around there, somewhere in mid-April. We're closing our door. It's time for you to get in to Application Academy to get the support you need to put together your story so that you aren't one of those students that end up rejected because you didn't know how to tell your story. Come join us at applicationacademy.com. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. I'll see you soon at applicationacademy.com. The pre-med path can be super confusing. If you'd love some help on your path or on your applications, use the promo code PMY for pre-med years, PMY, over at medicalschoolhq.net and get some help from some of our experts, former directors of admissions, admissions officers, other experts. We have a small team ready to help you today. Again, that's promo code PMY to get a discount on our services at medicalschoolhq.net. The pre-med year, session number 372. Hello, and welcome to The Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. And welcome to The Pre-Med Years. I am so excited that you are here today witnessing the launch of something new and something exciting, something that I have been thinking about for a very, very, very long time. Now, if you have been following the pre-med years for a while, or MedEd Media, or any of the podcasts that I do, or follow me on Facebook and the Hangouts, which is at premedhangout.com, you'll know that I have lots of crazy ideas. And this idea was one that came to me at some point a while ago, and I didn't have the bandwidth to do it, right? I'm growing my team. We're up to about 16 people now, helping me really build out and create more content for you. More free stuff, more cheap stuff like the books that I have, or inexpensive, not cheap, inexpensive stuff like the books that I have. And I continue to think about how I can add more value to you, more resources for you. And this project was one of them, but I didn't have the bandwidth. I didn't have the knowledge to do it. This project is going to be, and we don't have the name finalized yet. It might be the final name, but it's Spanish for Pre-Meds. And obviously it'll work for all pre-health students, all medical students, etc. But this is a project that I wanted to do because I understand that having an understanding of Spanish in this country as a healthcare provider, whether you're a pre-med, a medical student, physician, dentist, PA, NP, whatever you are, understanding Spanish is important and is becoming more and more important every day in this country because we have obviously a lot of Spanish-speaking people in this country. And we as healthcare providers, it is our responsibility to make sure that our patients get the best possible care. And if that means we should understand some of their cultural differences, if that means we should provide them a safe place to speak their language and understand their language and communicate in their language, then that is what we need to do as healthcare providers. And this podcast is going to be a dive into Spanish for pre-med students. And obviously, I'm not going to likely teach you Spanish from A to Z, and you're not going to be a fluent Spanish speaker after this new podcast launches. But my goal with this new podcast is for you to really understand a lot of the reasons behind why you should be learning some basic Spanish and really help you understand some basic Spanish when it comes to speaking with patients. Now, to help me with that, I have Dr. Patrick Ridge, who is a professor at Virginia Tech. And I'm going to read his bio here so you understand who Patrick is and really understand what he is going to help bring to this project. He's an assistant professor of Spanish in the Department of Modern and Classical Languages and Literatures. Now, He's got a really cool job where his primary focus is, but you'll hear how he fits into the medical Spanish side as well. His current research focuses primarily on the literary and cultural representations of soccer in Latin America. He also specializes in film and media studies. So this guy literally watches soccer for a living as his research, which is pretty awesome, or football in the more appropriate name. He has published on the documentaries of World Cup 1978 in Argentina, homoafectivity in the Mexican Netflix series Club de Cuervos, masculinity in Brazilian soccer films, and violence in contemporary Spanish cinema. He has recently taught courses on Latin American documentary, soccer, and Mexican and Central American literature and culture. And this is where the Spanish for pre-meds comes in. As a certified medical interpreter, he also teaches Spanish for the medical professions. He's earned his PhD in Spanish from Arizona State University and a Master's of Art from the University of Louisville. So, Dr. Patrick Ridge is joining me on this podcast. And after this podcast that you're about to hear, which was kind of a kickoff podcast episode for this Spanish for Pre-Meds, I immediately asked Patrick to join me as a partner for this project because, well, number one, he teaches this at Virginia Tech. And number two, he has the background, the understanding, the knowledge. He's been a medical interpreter for a long time. He's a certified medical interpreter. And he's going to really help me solidify what this project is and why it's important for you and really help you understand how to communicate with patients, maybe not necessarily fluently, but at least really understanding a lot of it. So go to SpanishForPremeds.com. We'll have that link set up and it'll take you to an email list where you can sign up to be notified when this podcast actually launches. Again, SpanishForPremeds.com. Now, in this specific episode that you're about to hear, this was an episode that I did with Patrick or Dr. Ridge that was going to be one of the first couple launch episodes of the Spanish for Pre-Meds podcast, where we talk about the importance of understanding Spanish and understanding culture when it comes to these patients that are coming from different parts of the world. And so you're about to hear that. Again, go to SpanishForPremeds.com. Sign up to be notified when this podcast actually launches, which will likely be end of January, beginning of February is what we are shooting for. But with timelines, they usually get kicked back. And so somewhere around February will be when this is coming out again. SpanishForPremeds.com. Let's go and jump in. Say hello to Patrick for the Spanish for Premeds podcast. Patrick, welcome to the Spanish for Premeds podcast. How are you today?
Good. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited. You are the first guest and probably one of the only guests for this podcast specifically, at least in as my brain is kind of creating it as we go, of this podcast that started a while ago, at least in my head, to really help students understand, number one, how to speak Spanish with patients, and number two, kind of the importance around speaking Spanish or whatever that native tongue is for that patient. And when I brought on a new student to help me with this project, she immediately thought of you and said, you need to speak with Patrick. He would be an amazing guest for this podcast. So thank you for taking the time for joining me today. And I want to start off with kind of who you are and how you ended up on this podcast with me.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm really humbled that, the student you're talking about, Caroline, she thought of me. But this is kind of my secondary specialty at Virginia Tech. I'm a professor, assistant professor of Spanish, and I actually specializes in sport or Latin American soccer as a cultural practice, right? But secondary to that is my interest in medical interpretation. And I teach a course called Spanish for the Medical Professions. When I was hired at Virginia Tech, this was they were interested in somebody that could teach this course. And I said, well, that's definitely something I can do since I have a background in medical interpreting. I don't have my full, the national certification, but I have a state certification in Kentucky, which is the Bridging the Gap certification. I worked at several different free clinics, and then I was, after one of them being the Kentucky Racing Health Services Center at Churchill Downs in Louisville, Kentucky. That's where I'm from. And then also, when I got my PhD, we moved out to Arizona State or to Phoenix. And I worked at Cathedral Health Services out there, working I think it was the first Saturday of every month. So I got this interest in using my Spanish. I had always had a background in Spanish. I'd taken it since I was a kid, and had studied abroad. And this was a great way to actually use my Spanish and engage with the community. So I'm really feel grateful for those experiences. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about those as we go on. But
so you're not a native Spanish speaker.
No, actually, I'm not. Both my parents are from Louisville, Kentucky. Not a native Spanish speaker. I started when I was a kid. I think right about first grade, and then took it in high school. All the way up to high school. I wanted to be. To go into pre-med, I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to help people in some way. I took calculus and biology and didn't work out so well. But then I studied abroad in Panama. There's actually an exchange program in Panama City, Panama, and with the University of Louisville, through the University of Louisville. And I said, man, this is actually really what I want to do. I love doing this. I love the opportunity to meet different people and people from other cultures. And it's something I excelled at in school too. So I said, this is what I want to do. And I decided to, I'm going to get my PhD, but not, in something else, and that being Spanish. Right.
Yeah. Very interesting. You got your PhD from Arizona State, which is where I initially wanted to go to undergrad to play baseball when I was growing up in LA. So that those plans change as things usually do. So I want to talk to you. It's obviously, I was interested in how you got to the clinical world using your Spanish skills. And obviously you said that you started off kind of pre-med. So that makes a lot of sense. Before we hit record, you mentioned that there's a difference between translating and interpreting. Can you, before we dive more into this, can you just break down those two things for students?
Yeah, definitely. This is one thing that I hear, and I think I was telling you too before. I ask this question to everybody that I'd speak in front of about interpreting. What's the difference? Is there a difference between interpreting and translation? And most people say they just can't put their... they can't really define the difference, right? And so interpreting is actually interpreting the spoken word, and then translation is the written word. So translating into the target language, in my case, for the most time, Spanish. So that's the main difference, is the difference between spoken and written word, that being interpretation and translation. So...
Okay. I think most people, when you say, oh, there's a difference, I think the first thing that would pop into someone's mind is like, oh, one is kind of paraphrasing and one is more direct.
And the other thing I don't understand really why this has become so erroneously used in everyday interaction, but maybe it's popular culture that just overthinks this, and then people just learn from popular culture, in the TV or the internet, and it's used in those settings, right? So, but I, for the moment, I hear translation used, and I just cringe all the time, But interpretation would be the correct term.
That's like when a lawyer probably hears someone using either slander or libel wrong, right? Because that's the same thing. One is one is written defamation, one is verbal defamation, or whatever the terms are.
Exactly. Exactly.
And they're different. So very cool. So let's dig in, right? The goal of this podcast, again, is to expose students to specifically Spanish. And if this podcast works well, then we'll probably dive into some other languages. But from your experiences, number one, as an interpreter, right? Not a translator, as an interpreter, in all of the medical clinics that you've been in, from your experiences, from being a professor of Spanish for medical professionals or medical professions, is that what you said? Yeah. What is the importance of a medical professional or anyone really for a patient who speaks Spanish? What is that impact for the patient that that professional coming in can either speak Spanish fluently with them or at least has some baseline level of communication skills in their native tongue?
Well, I think this, knowing that, I think if you think any patient feels a little bit vulnerable, when going into a practice, there's always the question of fear. So add that to not knowing, the language, or like saying that not knowing English or having little skill in English or little knowledge of English. Mm-hmm. So adding that kind of amplifies the fear that's already there for the patient going into the, going into the clinic, right? So I think that the knowledge of, if you have an interpreter or access to an interpreter, or at least, making it known to the providers that, okay, listen, I don't speak English as well, and so that right there, if you have an interpreter, especially an on-site interpreter, a lot of this is from my experience or from, hearing from other medical professionals, or my wife's actually a nurse, she's going to be a nurse practitioner. So with her experiences as being a nurse, how many times she's told me, oh, well, we just use the phone interpreting system. And I say, oh man, that's such a, you kind of lose the visual communication necessary for interpretation. I think a lot of times that's not thought of by medical professionals, right? And my thing, here to getting back to the topic, is that I think it eliminates the fear, right, for the patient. I think if they know that, a lot of times, medical terminology or being told or being diagnosed with something is pretty complex. So another thing,
even English to English, right? The patients are like, I have no clue what you just said.
Exactly. So I think that just knowing that you have somebody there that speaks the language, your own language, and let's say, you have diabetes, these are the things that you need to do. These are the steps that you need to take. And I think another thing, if you think about something like that, like nutrition or, having not just the linguistic competence, or a knowledge of, say the interpreter has a knowledge of, or the provider for that matter, has a, kind of a term, an understanding of the linguistic aspects, but also the cultural aspects, having a knowledge or a base knowledge of certain cultural practices that are, that a patient has is really beneficial also to the provider. So, let's say a common diet, that helps with the diet, not only with a diagnosis, but also with treatment. How can you change your diet, what do you usually eat, and actually understanding what is a torta, what is a tacos al pastor. I feel sorry for the providers that don't know what tacos al pastor are, because they're so delicious, right? But I think that's something that it can really be beneficial, both the patient and the provider, right? It basically, what it comes down to is it preserves the patient provider relationship, and I think that's really important here. If you don't have access to an interpreter, it just breaks that, and there's a communication breakdown, and then overall the quality of care goes down, right? It's affected.
Yeah. Which obviously our number one goal as a medical professional is to take care of that patient. And if there's any sort of communication breakdown for whatever reason, then there's going to be a decrease in outcomes, which isn't great. But something you just mentioned, right? So if we have an interpreter, we're hearing the words. As the medical professional, if I don't speak Spanish or whatever language that the patient is speaking, if I have an interpreter, I'm hearing the words. But from a cultural perspective, I'm not potentially understanding the nuances in what they are saying, or the nuances of what's going on at home, or the nuances in medical care, or the belief in medical care. How is a student or a medical professional supposed to build that acumen as well, right? Here we're like, you need to learn Spanish. Oh, and you need to learn all of the cultural nuances for your patients right. as well.
Yeah, no, I think it's, I mean, it's essential, right? You know, just to give an example of a cultural competency or cultural knowledge that, you know, that you need to know about. If a patient, for instance, says, oh, well, I feel like I have empacho, which is, empacho is like an equivalent would be stomach cramps or indigestion or something like that. Yeah. But the way that these are described, you know, or susto, you know, susto is another thing that would be maybe an equivalent of post-traumatic stress, right? Yeah. So susto literally means fear or afraid. So if the interpreter's just, you know, say, well, he feels afraid. I feel afraid, you know, interpreting the message of the patient, right? What the mm-hmm. patient's saying, you know, I'm afraid, I have this fear. I think it's really beneficial for the provider to understand, okay, well, fear a lot of times, especially if he's describing it as susto, the knowledge of that and of that, let's say cultural bound syndrome is, you know, again, essential. And it's essential in understanding how pain or sickness is described within that culture and interpreted within that culture. So I think the understanding of something like that can, again, it comes back to improving the treatment or the diagnosis of what, you know, the patient is feeling in that instance. Right.
Yeah.
I think another important thing I always, and this is just an experience of the knowledge that can help how you run your practice, right? I think this is essential. Just having a base knowledge of how Hispanic names work. I think a lot of people don't understand that, you know, a lot of times Spanish-speaking patients will have two last names. You know, the first last name will be the paternal last name, and then the second would be the maternal, you know, the last name of the mother, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the mother's maiden name. And the problem that this is, in my own experience, you know, I've had to be in charge of, as an interpreter working in a free clinic, not only intake and patient interviews, but also filing. And how many times I've come across, let's say the patient's name is last name or is Juan Fernandez Hernandez, right? So how many times that has been wrongly filed and how many times that has created, let's say, multiple files for one patient. Mm. And then that can lead to so much confusion. So just the understanding of that, I think that's the reason why a lot of, you know, Spanish speakers living in the United States, you know, hyphenate their last name. So stuff like that, just little things that can help enhance or improve your practice too, or avoid confusion. That's one thing. Another thing, my students were reading when I assigned, and this is in Appalachia, you know, live in Appalachia. It's, I think it was Materia Medica or Encurandarismo in Appalachia. So what are some of the home remedies used by Spanish speaking patients? And I think one, you know, this, it gave a, you know, huge list of different, a survey of what, you know, what was used as home remedies by Spanish speaking patients. One of them being, I think in one case, I think there were seven cases of people or patients using Coca-Cola as a treatment for high blood pressure. So stuff like that, you know, not all were that just, okay, well, that's probably not the best. Maybe we need to do some more.
I've seen some YouTube videos. It cleans toilets really well. So it must clean arteries just as well.
Right, right. So it's just like things like that. Now, of course, you know, herbal remedies like chamomile tea, something like that, yeah, are very prevalent within Spanish-speaking households. You know, those teas used for stomach aches or indigestion. You know, so having a knowledge of what is being used in the household, and then taking that into account when diagnosing, you know, what your patient or overviewing, you know, what your patient has, right, or suffering.
Yeah. And so just really understanding a lot, right? Just understanding that there are potentially cultural differences may make the biggest difference in you asking the right questions, right? You may not go into the patient encounter with knowing everything, but knowing that there are differences will lead you to asking the right questions.
Right. No, exactly. No, I think that's another thing you have to take into account. The interpreter is not there to interpret what's not said, you know, right? The interpreter is there to relay the message that you say. So if you don't say or you don't ask the right question, he or she isn't going to interpret that, right? So you have to know, you know, sometimes the right question is asked. Now, a certified medical interpreter will also know, you know, when to become an advocate and, you know, to stop the interpreting process and try to explain something that might be lost in communication here, but lost in the interpretation session. You know, I think that is also important to know, you know that the interpreter, the certified one at least, is only going to be interpreting what you say. So sometimes you have to fill in the gaps.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you mentioned that because I was gonna ask that, right? That could be a whole podcast in of itself is how to use a medical interpreter. But like something you mentioned earlier, using that word like susto, when you have that, you mentioned it's very similar to PTSD, the way that a Latin person or Latino would be using it. And so if it's just interpreted as, oh, I have this fear, anxiety, the medical professional may not understand more PTSD and what's driving it and the kind of this bigger impact on life. Is it that interpreter's job to take a break and go, wait a minute, I don't think this medical professional really understands what this word is. Let me go beyond what the patient said.
Right. No, that's definitely, I mean, the medical, if he or she is a certified medical interpreter, that's a sign of a certified interpreter is that they would stop the session. If they see or notice that maybe something's being lost here, in relaying that message they'll say, well, I'm stopping the session. They'll stop both parties here. They'll say, you know, they'll explain in English. Let's say if it's a English speaking doctor or provider, right? Say, I'm going to stop the session. I need to clarify something. And then in Spanish would, you know, explain that to the Spanish speaking patient, you know, and then of course, you know, what is, you know, the medical interpreter would be, okay, well, susto is actually a cultural bound syndrome. Sometimes it's, you might want to take a look at this. You might want to take this into consideration when you're, you know, finalizing your diagnosis, right?
Yeah.
I think another thing that I was going to mention here too about becoming an advocate and the interpreter being an advocate, I think it's also important for the provider to take into account that, you know, there's been so many times that I've been working in these clinics, right? And let's say a patient gets diagnosed with, diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol or whatever. And then the provider will come in and they might have some translated materials like, oh, okay, here's some translated materials for, you know, care for diabetes or, you know, lifestyle changes for patients with high blood pressure. And we'll just give them to the patient and then immediately say, okay, well, see you later, and just walk out. Because I guess they want to give to the next patient, but not taking it into account the possibility that maybe the patient not just has questions or follow-up questions, but maybe the patient doesn't even, might be illiterate, mm-hmm. might not read. So that's another thing that's when the interpreter would, you know, would speak up and become an advocate, you know, making the provider know, you know, that, okay, well, maybe this patient doesn't speak, isn't able to read or has a low level reading competency, right? And then the other fact is that just assuming that, okay, oh, it's in Spanish, well, maybe that Spanish is actually their second language and their first language might be, let's say, Maya Quiche or an indigenous language. That's another thing that every once in a while will happen, you know, especially with older patients that move here from, let's say, Mexico or other parts of Central America.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting the illiteracy, right? You mentioned it here, but that's the same with English speaking patients, where like here's this whole pamphlet of information. See you later, goodbye. I'm like, yeah. And we we don't take the time to really make sure any patient can read what we're giving them.
Right, exactly.
So let's take a step back and really look into, right, for the purposes of this podcast, I'm not going to take a student and teach them how to speak perfect Spanish overnight. But my hope is that with this podcast, we can get a student speaking some basic Spanish and really building an interest in Spanish and hopefully spending more time outside of this podcast to learn more. And they come to Virginia Tech and take your class, and then they'll be perfect Spanish speakers. right. So for the student who's really starting at zero, what is the most important thing that he or she needs to understand when it comes to starting to speak Spanish?
Well, I think it's just a basic understanding of some basic phrases, you know, learn how to say, you know, I'm, like say, like, yo soy Patrick, soy, voy a ser su intérprete o proveedor, right? So like, I'm Patrick, I'm going to be your provider today. If you know just the basic, some basic Spanish, some basic terms, I think it really helps, again, to eliminate that fear that the patient might have. Also, you know, having an understanding that, you know, this is, if you've taken Spanish before, the understanding between formal and informal Spanish, there's a tú and usted, right? So using the usted as a, especially with, you know, older patients, I think there's a certain degree of respect that needs to be shown towards those patients, you know, and I think, but if you just introduce yourself, some basic phrases, it really helps to eliminate the fear that the patient might have. I think another thing, you know, avoiding, let's say, raising your voice, you know, that with the thought of like, okay, well, that's going to make them understand me more. Better,
that's
right?
The best. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's like stuff like that can be, you know, it's pretty offensive.
Hola, me llamo. No, it doesn't
right,
work.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean,
you know, they're not deaf. They just don't speak English.
Right. Right. This is, you know, again, some of the stuff you see on in movies or, on TV to kind of pokes fun at these situations. But, you know, having an understanding of those interactions, some basic Spanish. And, you know, just, I think there are a lot of good books out there that, you know, the book we read is a good manual for, that provides some basic phrases, some basic terminology. But I think what you should do is, as a professional or a provider, take note of some of the phrases that you use on every patient encounter, right? So what, you know, hello, my name is, you know, I'll be, why did you come in today? Rate your pain on a scale of 1 to 10, stuff like that. You know, most of the time, I think this is mostly it's review for providers, you know, what are the main reasons for patient visits, you know, most of the time it's for pain, right? Mm-hmm. So I think understanding what are the questions, what are the things that I ask my patients every day, you know, every single patient, okay, well, how can I build up a, you know, a vocabulary, a bank of expressions, you know, that I can use? And there's several sources on online. I know the government has a lot of federal sources that are there and resources that are online with actual recordings by native speakers, you know, so that can help with, you know, practicing some expressions, you know, stuff like that.
For someone who's stepping into this role, number one, as a pre-med or a medical student, and they're trying to learn all of this medical terminology first in English, and now it's like, okay, now you should go learn it in Spanish as well. What is a good way for them potentially to maybe learn side by side both languages at the same time?
Ooh, it's a daunting task. My students, you know, and of course I learn from my students too. You know, my wife, again, I said she's a nurse practitioner. Sometimes even just pronouncing some of these words in English can be a tough tough task, right? So, but I think if you're learning side by side, if you're already learning these terms in bodily systems and anatomy, things of this sort in English, you know, sources like Medline Plus, you know, bilingual sources, I think also, what's another bilingual source? Mayo Clinic is another one that our Mayo Clinic has a very good, I think there is actually trilingual. So if you wanted to learn, if you're trying to speak Portuguese as well, you can actually see a lot of the terminology that, you know, you can research in English first, and then there's a button for Spanish, and there you go. You have, let's say, the term. So I think that as far as a written source, it might not necessarily help with pronunciation, but as far as, you know, being exposed to actually the translations, you know, and if you have to work with, if you're translating documents for your practice, right, or just need to translate, let's something like, I don't know, like PTSD or something like that, that you would have that access to that resource. You know, I think that's a good way. But as far as from learning it through speaking, you know, I think that's a tough, you know, if you are working with an interpreter, if you have access to an interpreter, it's always, you know, make the most of that situation too. You know, learning through practice, you know, if you see, okay, well, what I'm using these phrases. Okay. Well, you could also record I wouldn't record sessions. There might be some HIPAA violations there, but I think that you could work with an interpreter and maybe record a conversation with them and work. Okay, well, what can I improve? What are some sayings that I could, you know, kind of use in my practice, right? Mm-hmm.
What about the student who's listening to this thinking, why do I need to go through the effort of learning Spanish? This is America. Our native language, our national language is English. This is something that they should know.
Yeah, that's a loaded question. I love it though. you know, I always ask this question. I think I start every single class I teach with the question, well, how many you know, what is the country with the most Spanish speakers in the world? And, you know, a couple of people say, well, Mexico, a couple of people say Spain. I might get one or two that say Argentina. Sometimes the U.S. is not even brought up. You know, there's 60 million Spanish speakers in the United States, and that's for a number of reasons. You know, they, and that's after Mexico. You know, we are the second largest Spanish speaking population in the world.
Wow!
It's Mexico, U.S., and if I'm not mistaken, I think it's Colombia, then Argentina and Spain, right? So I think that's something that people don't really understand. And then other people, you know, of course, if it gets, I mean, this could get all political, right? But I think you have to remember too, asking students, well, do you know the history of Spanish in this country? And that, then you bring up, you know, the Mexican-American War, which is interesting too. If you actually go to the Wikipedia page for the Mexican-American War, that's in English, it's called that. In Spanish, it's actually called the U.S. intervention in Mexico. So, or U.S. invasion, right? In Mexico. So I think it's also interesting to understand the,
it's all about perspective.
Exactly. Right. So, so you have millions of Spanish speakers, you know, Mexico before 1848, before this conflict, basically that territory included Texas, and then all of the states basically have a Hispanic name, right? Montana, Colorado, where you are, right? Mm-hmm. I think California, Nevada, all these, you know, all these Spanish, you know, Hispanic names of these states. So you have millions of speakers, you know, after 1848, they continue living there, but this imaginary border just goes south of them, you know, to more or less what it is today, right? Some parts being divided by the Rio Grande and other parts just kind of an imaginary border, right? Mm-hmm. So I think people fail to take that into consideration sometimes, that, you know, there is a long history of Spanish and Spanish speaking populations in the United States. This isn't just a phenomenon that's happened in, you know, the last 30 or 40 years with immigration. You have to take in consideration the Bracero program of the 40s, you know, that brought a lot of, that relied on a lot of labor, right, from, you know, south of the border. So the history of that. And then, of course, you know, more recently, the immigration or the migration north of a lot of Spanish speakers, right? So I think people need to understand that, okay, this is, you know, this is a large part of our population, right? And the necessity to actually learn and improve treatment, you know, I think part of, you know, being a good healthcare provider is to understand your, who your population is, you know, who are your patients. And then also taking into account, you know, that this is something that's legally required by Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. You know, that's something that, again, some providers might not even think about, right, or might not even be aware of. So the access to an interpreter is a right if, you know, that, let's say, that hospital or clinic receives federal funding.
Mm. It's important. And to bring it like full circle back to the beginning of our conversation, the goal of being a medical professional, whether you're a physician, PA, NP, is to have the best outcomes for your patients. And yeah, having that breakdown in communication due to a language barrier, either because you don't have access to an interpreter or because you don't care to try to have access to an interpreter, is going to hurt your patients. And right, that's just not the goal of becoming a healthcare professional.
Exactly right.
So. Well, awesome. Patrick, as we wrap up here, I think this is a good start, hopefully, to the Spanish for Pre-Meds podcast, or whatever the ultimate name is of this project. What is kind of a final takeaway for a student to really just get going in this world? Is it go buy a book and start learning? Obviously, there's this podcast that they can start listening to once we get up and rolling. Is it go and download an app that there seem to be a thousand of? What is an easy way for a student to really start diving into this?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, you know, find what you like, right? You know, I think there are a lot of, you mentioned podcasts, right? There are a lot of, there's actually Radio Ambulante. This is a Daniel Alarcón. He has a bilingual podcast online. It's not necessarily, sometimes there are some medical related episodes, but find something that you like. You know, if you're on a road trip, it's probably hard to listen, you know, to kind of follow a bilingual podcast, right? Or to read the transcript, right? But find something you like, you know, whether it be movies or news or something within popular culture, maybe that's something that's entertaining that you find that you could, with maybe with a theme of medical medicine, right, or disease and sickness, right? And I would just, you know, find what you like and kind of listen. You know, if you need to use the subtitles, that way you can at least expose yourself to daily interaction that's presented in that that media. Or that's one way. You know, find something that you like, something within popular culture, right, that's going to be entertaining, just to kind of expose yourself to the language and the sounds, right? Another is, you know, when you are studying, let's say anatomy, or if you're in your experiences, just find sources that are bilingual, right? Find things that are easily, where you can easily access Spanish. And also, you know, it's easier said than done, especially if you live in a city. There's access to plenty of free clinics, especially that offer interpreting services. So try to volunteer at those places, right? This is a way to expose yourself, not only to other cultures, other people, but, you know, to Spanish itself. So I think those are, you're only going to learn through practice, right? There's several things, you know, as a medical interpreter, things that I would have never thought of if I hadn't participated in the clinics, that I did. You know, I think that just participating in those experiences or having those experiences helps you develop kind of a base knowledge of Spanish, you know? I think that's, you know, with the end goal of thinking that, you know, eliminating fear, and for the patient, you know, I think if you have a base knowledge of Spanish, it really helps improve care and the quality of care. But I think that's it's a tough task, you know. I think it's something that you really have to commit to. But if you're just starting, you know, think about those, find the opportunities, you know, find ways to engage with those communities, right?
All right, there you have it. Again, SpanishForPremeds.com. Sign up to be notified when this episode or when this podcast actually launches in Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm so excited to bring you this project. It will likely be a book where you can learn. It will be the podcast. Obviously, we're going to do YouTube videos. It's going to be a full project to really help you understand Spanish, to give you some confidence in going and even just saying hello to a patient in their language and doing it appropriately and introducing who you are appropriately will help build that connection with your patients. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I am excited to bring you the Spanish for Premeds podcast or whatever the name will be in the future. Stay tuned again, SpanishForPremeds.com. Have a great week. We'll see you next time here on the Premed Years.
This is MedEd Media.